This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is the name of that place you used to always? I heard that in all of your podcasts.
The Feisty Pint.
The Feisty Pint. That's it.
Yeah.
I've never been there, but you tell me the name, I recognize it.
Yeah, I should reach out to them for a sponsorship deal, because I send everybody on the western slope of Colorado to the Feisty Pint.
You're listening to the premier podcast for men who want to not only be better with women, but want to be better men in general. This is the Come On Man podcast. And here's your host, Paul Bauer.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another week of Come On Man. If you haven't done so already, please like, subscribe, hit those notifications. You guys should know what to do already. Drop a comment. If you guys are watching during the pre-recorded live on Monday mornings, drop a comment. I'm usually in there while I'm editing videos. If not, drop a comment below. If you're watching the replay, drop a comment below your favorite emoji. Doesn't really matter. All that kind of stuff boosts us in the algorithms. And then, you guys can send super chats during these recorded episodes. I just can't bring them up on screen, but I do always screenshot it and I will share it on social media if you do that. Please, speaking of social media, follow me on social media. The links are in the description. Guys, get on the email list, list.comeonmanpod.com. Get 20 dating app openers, get free stickers, and get a free chapter of my book. Everything I Wish I Knew When I Was 18. Speaking of the book, it's available on Audible and Amazon, and you can also get autographed copies as well. The link's in the description for that. And let's see here. Guys, join my beer club, beer.comeonmanpod.com. It's a good group of men, and it's a very active group. In fact, it's more active than the 3% Brotherhood group, who my guest today is from. Sadly, the beer club is way more active, and we have 1/3 of the members. So I don't know what's up with that, but if you want an active men's group, join my beer club. It's only like $10 a month. And then if you want to work with me directly, you can book a free call by going to coaching.comeonmanpod.com. All right, my guest today, I already said, is one of my 3% brothers. He's one of my oldest 3% brothers. We're not going to use his real name today, though. He's a little bit shy. Actually, honestly, coming on a men's show like this is dangerous. It's dangerous for men. Guys can lose their jobs over stuff like this. So anyone that ever wants to come on the show, if you guys are in the 3% Brotherhood, if you guys are in the beer club or something like that, and you want to come on the show and tell your story, but you're afraid of people finding out who you are, we can do it anonymously like we did with my man here. He's going by Bob today. I asked him if he wanted to have a cooler name than that, and he was very insistent on Bob. So I was like, Bob's not sexy, dude. So I at least gave him a sexy avatar to use. So that's what we're using today. Anyways, I had reached out to my 3% brothers and asked if anybody wanted to volunteer as tribute to be my guest. I was looking for guests, and my man, we've known each other for going on 4 years now. And he's like, I've never been on the show. I'd be happy to do that. So I decided to have him on the show, and it's a little bit of a mix of what I usually ask the brothers in the group. And then also he had a whole list of bullet points on stuff that Corey recommends in How to Be a 3% Man versus what worked better for him. Right. So we have that discussion, like what did Corey say in the book versus what worked for us, right? So that's what this discussion is today. I will bring you that discussion, which I think you're going to get a lot of value at right after these words. Life is a journey filled with twists and turns. Why is it that essential life lessons aren't taught in school? You probably know that the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell, but do you know how to invest in a Roth IRA? We're not taught to build ourselves mentally, physically, and spiritually. The roadmap to success is more than just a college degree. You don't have to follow the traditional route. Success isn't confined to a classroom. It's about discovering your own path. You ever wish that someone handed you a guidebook to life when you were 18? Well, it's never too late to rewrite your story. Everything I wish I knew when I was 18. Advice for young men to create a great life for themselves. This book is your compass, guiding you to pick the right career, how to invest wisely, and how to prepare for a fulfilling future, to take control of your health and your fitness, learn how to date efficiently and find genuine desire, and master the art of leading healthy relationships. Your path is defined by the choices you make, not by others' expectations. Don't wait until you're 35 to unlock your potential. Order your copy now on Amazon. Rewrite your story. Build the life you deserve. All right, joining me on the podcast anonymously today is one of my 3% brothers who we're just going to call Bob today. I wanted to call him something cool like Apollo or Xavier, but he was insistent on Bob. Anyway, I reached out to my 3% brothers for some guests, and my man here volunteered as tribute. He wants to talk about deciphering the teachings of Corey Wayne and perhaps talk about what Corey recommends versus what worked better for him. How are you today, Bob?
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me on. It's cool to chat with you online. And yeah. Not in chat.
Yeah, I think this is the first time you and I have actually really had a conversation. So this is kind of cool.
But yeah, just considering how long we've known each other, or at least online.
Yeah, because we go back. We go back to the original group, you know, several years now. You're one of the original 3% brothers. So
that's, OG.
You're an OG. So let me ask you this. I like to ask certain questions for all my 3% brothers there. What led you to first read How to Be a 3% Man?
That's a great question. So I guess I'm not that much different to other people. It started off as usual. My first relationship went sour. Things didn't turn out the way I wanted to. And I ended up on the internet. And I guess it started off actually with the red pill. I don't know. I somehow came across Rollo. I came across Rich Cooper. And I found a lot of their stuff interesting. And it spoke to me in a certain way. But at the end of the day, it didn't give me all the answers I was looking for. And I happened to just stumble across Corey Wayne on YouTube, started watching some of his videos, and I found it really refreshing. You know, here's a guy who comes up with solutions and doesn't talk in circles. And the best thing I loved about it was he comes about it in a positive way. You know, he genuinely loves women. He loves interacting with women. And so that's basically what drew me in. And I think what I really liked about Corey also was that he gives it a structure, right? So I think with most of us, we know bits and pieces, like he says. Most men know some of what is to be done. But I found that Corey gives it such a good structure that you kind of just get into the flow of things and start trying things out. And that's how I came across Corey.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think your critiques of some of the Red Pill creators are valid because, you know, Rollo says he doesn't give out prescriptions, right? So a lot of his content, and I would say, and Rich is sort of, not to shit on Rich, but he's derivative of Rollo. They don't give out prescriptions. They sort of just tell you how women are, but they don't tell you what to do about it necessarily. And that's what I agree. I like Corey because Corey does say, okay, this is how you navigate that. This is how you handle that. This is how you initiate a text conversation, you know, like stuff like that. So yeah, I would agree with that 100%.
And I also think like with most people in any space, right, the ones who are successful are the ones who are able to assimilate information from different sources and make sense out of it. Because I remember hearing on one of your podcasts, you mentioned it as well, like a lot of the stuff that Corey has comes, for example, from David D'Angelo, right? And so it's not like Corey's coming up with some new rocket science that I've never heard of before, but he made sense out of it and came up with his own kind of, I would say, twist to it. And I think people who understand something well are able to put it across in a format that under people can understand, who are maybe newcomers to the space. And I think Corey is one of those people who does that very well.
Yeah, actually, the more I look into the stuff, the more I study game and other people, I notice that there's these common threads. I finally sort of started loosely piecing together a family tree of game, you know, who influenced who. And you'll find that guys like David D'Angelo influence so many guys in the space, you know, including what's his name? Royce, who's one of the three R's of the red pill space. You know, there was a Rollo, Royce, and Roosh, and it Royce influenced Rollo a lot. So it's like, by derivative, again, going to the derivative thing, right? It's, you know, Rollo has some David D'Angelo in there somewhere, you know? So yeah, it's kind of interesting when you look at it that way. Cause a lot of guys, man, when I first started out too, people were like, oh, you're just trying to be like Corey Wade. I'm like, I'm a student of Corey's, you know, and I give credit where credit's due. I'm not like, I invented this. I'm like, no, I learned it from How to Be a 3% Man. It's a great book.
Right. But the thing is, you didn't stop there. You didn't stop there. You got your own twist to think. You found your own path. You found your own material, which suited, I think, the way you wanted to go about. And I think that's the thing which leads to success. The people who only stay, let's say, with Corey Wayne and are like, okay, Corey's the God. Whatever he says is the Bible, and that's all we do. In my experience, those are the people who have not really probably got to the levels they wanted to be. It's the ones who found things which worked, things which did not, because not everything that Corey says works too, right? So I think you're also one of those who found probably pillars of the red space. You found Corey, I think, and all the other people in the space, and you took the pieces from them which fit for you. And I think that's what makes probably a real 3% man, so to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I think it's just a sign of a good, or someone that wants like a really effective solution that works for them. And this is one of the reasons why I think the guys in the red pill space don't necessarily like to give prescriptions, because every guy's different. And so certain things that work really good for other guys don't necessarily work good for other guys. So you really do have to sort of take what's useful to you. Like, try it out. Does this work with how you do things? If it doesn't, disregard it and find something that does, you know? So right. I think it's just about being efficient. Not to self-promote, but I mean, that's what the podcast is for. Like I put in my book, I mashed everything that I've learned over the last several years of studying this stuff together. And there's a lot of specific red pill stuff in there. There's stuff that I learned from guys like Alan Roger Curry in there. But still, I would say a majority of it still Corey Wayne, you know, it's still the Corey Wayne philosophy and stuff when it comes to dating. Going back to How to Be a 3% Man, how many times have you read it now? Do you know, or did you lose count?
Oh gosh, let me put it this way. I mean, if I had the book, I mean, I have it on Audible, but if it were on a CD, I think it would have scratches by now. I've read it at least 15 times, if not 20. I found that the best medium for me is to read it, or at least listen to it, every 3 months. It keeps it fresh in my mind. And
That's smart. Did you get your diploma in the mail? Did Corey send you the 3% diploma in the mail?
I'm still waiting for it.
Yeah, me too. I've been waiting. I just passed my 22nd read of it, and I'm like, where is that goddamn diploma? Now, I agree with that. I think one of the biggest mistakes guys make in the space, and you see it in the brotherhood, where guys will read the book, they might even read it 10 to 15 times, but they are just doing it until they can get into their next relationship, and then as soon as they do, they stop reading the stuff and they fall back on old programming. And then next thing you know, a year later, 2 years later, after everything fell apart because they lost all their frame and they lost all their game and they forgot everything from the book, they find their way back to the group and they're like, yeah, I guess it's time to start reading that book again. It's like, well, you should have never stopped. You should have at least revisited it once a year, you know, just to keep it fresh. Yeah. You know, yeah. Have you noticed that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I came to the realization maybe like, let's say a year or so after I started reading Corey, I was like, this cannot be something I just memorize. I have to make it a part of me. And a big part of, like, you're into like law of attraction, and it's also about your subconscious mind. So, like, for example, when you're sitting across a girl on a date and you are just thinking about, I don't know, things from the book, it's not going to come across authentic. But mm-hmm. when you make it a part of you, you may not do things by the book, but you will do it the right way. And that's kind of one of the things about what I mean about demystifying the principles of Corey. It's when you realize that you don't need to follow the book to a T, but it's when you understand the principles and you make it a part of you. It's a part of your identity. You don't need to wake up in the morning, read through the book, and go about your day. It's a part of you. It's in your subconscious. That's when you start seeing things kicking for you. And that's basically what I've seen with me personally.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. And that's one of the good reasons of listening to it on Audible, because a lot of times, you know, while we're doing other things, you know, we're at the gym, we're driving a car, whatever, and you're listening to it on audio, you'll focus on certain things and then your mind will wander off on other places, but your subconscious right. mind is still consuming it. And that's where our habits come from. Our habits come from our subconscious programming. And so, yeah, once it's programmed in there in your subconscious on how to act with the stuff, you just do it. It's like muscle memory. You don't even have to think about it. And that, yeah, you're absolutely right. That's exactly where you want to be. You want to become the game.
You know? Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Have you said you sort of came from this space from like Rollo and Rich. Have you read any other dating relationship red pill books?
Oh yeah. I think once I was done with Corey, let me just have a look. I'm going through my Audible right now. Okay. I read The Tactical Guide to Women by Sean Smith. I think he used to be with Rich for some time.
Yeah, I think they had a falling out, but I just had Sean on my podcast a couple months ago. I interviewed him about The Tactical Guide to Women. He just released a new book called Gatekeeper. And it's all about like managing long-term relationships. He sent me an autographed copy of it. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, cause it's in the paperback, but I'm going to get to it. But yeah, that was a really good book.
It was. Yeah. Because, shortly after my first relationship, I met a girl who I kind of knew something was off with her, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And then once I read Sean's book, I realized that she had a bad case of BPD. And probably a host of other issues. She didn't grow up with her dad and stuff like that. But the book put things in a new light. And what I like about Sean is that he gives steps on how to figure out whether you can still work things out. Because I think people are realizing more and more that we are not all born perfect, right? We all have our own issues. And just because a girl may have, I mean, not a strong case of BPD, but some traces of it, doesn't mean you need to put her to the side of the road immediately. And that's what I liked about his book. And of course, The Man, the Myth, the Legend, Robert Glover is top of the list. I actually read No More Mr. Nice Guy before I read Dating Essentials for Men. And I found I did too.
Yeah,
great books, both of them. But I found that I had a lot of traces of this nice guy, you know, covert contracts is what he talks about. And that was something I found to be so deep rooted in me. That I think I read the book also, I would say also once, at least twice a year, if not more, because this is something I think I'll be working on the rest of my life probably. And
So I listened to No More Mr. Nice Guy, I think twice at some point. And I was listening to, there's another guy in the red pill space. He's lesser known. He's known within like Ryan Stone circles, but he's lesser known, I think, to the broader community. He goes by Rob Says, and Rob's been on my podcast a couple times. And I was watching maybe Red Evening, I think it was one of his shows, and he was talking about No More Mr. Nice Guy, and he goes, you know, it's important to not just read that book, but to also practice the breaking through exercises that are in that book. Right. And I was like, wait a second, there's exercises in that book? And that's why we read books multiple times, you know, because we completely miss stuff like that, you know. And when it's like, hey, breaking through exercise, like I just sort of gloss over that as I'm listening to it, you know. So I listened to it again, I think last year sometime, and I made sure to pay attention to what he was saying with that. Because there are some really good exercises there that a lot of guys need to, you know, they need to work on. If it's not a problem, if the exercise that he brings up isn't something that you suffer with, then maybe skip that one. But there's almost all of us have been raised to be nice guys. And it's important to go through and identify and be honest with yourself about some of the things that he talks about in that book. And if there's an exercise that's supposed to help you through that, do it. You know, that's what I would say about that book. But that's a life-changing book, though, that No More Mr. Nice Guy book. It's so, so eye-opening, man.
Totally. Like, even in my case, like, I realized, like, everyone has their own strengths and weaknesses, and one of mine has always been frame. And I realized that frame basically comes, or one of the big aspects of it is you being able to have this mental point of origin. And one of those things is, like, you need to learn how to say no. And that's something I found, I would say, for the better part of my teenage years, or even after that, pretty hard, you know. And it's when I realized that a lot of it has got to do with, like you said, we have been raised to be nice guys, we have a problem saying no. And this leads into our relationships where, you know, we look at our partner, she wants to do something, you want to do something else. She's like, hey, Bob, don't you want to come with me to the flower show? And you're like, I don't want to do it, but I don't want to say no, you know. And it stems from this fact of setting boundaries, of being able to say no when you really want to say no. And so, yeah, I think Robert Glover goes into deep parts of this as to why we are that way. And like I said, doing the assignments or the tasks that he's mentioned is really important.
Yeah, you know, talking about saying no, one of the things that I realized that I used to do, and I think a lot of guys do this stuff, right? There's commercials about this, but girls will drag their boyfriends or their husbands, like, to go shopping with them, right? They'll say, hey, why don't you come shopping with me? And then they'll go clothes shopping with their girl, and they got to sit there and they're holding their fucking purse the whole time. They're sitting there just like, Jesus Christ, you know, like, what? Yep. How many outfits is she going to try on? And I realized, man, I used to do that. I used to go, you know, shopping with my girlfriends, and, you know, and I was like, I thought this is what you're supposed to do. Like, no, you don't have to fucking do that. You could actually say, no, honey, why don't you go do that, and then we'll meet up later. Like, that's okay. That's okay to say that, guys. I don't know if you knew that. You don't have to go and hold her purse and shit like that. She can go girl shopping with her girlfriends, you know? Like, you don't have to go and hold purses and be just bored to tears, you know? Like, it's just not something you have to do. But guys think they have to, because we're all fucking raised to be nice guys, you know?
Yeah, one that actually absolutely gets under my skin is the one with hobbies. So I'm sure you may know also some people like this, who you call them up, you're like, hey, can we meet up this weekend? Let's grab a drink or something. And then they say this, like, in kind of self-deprecating tone, like, oh, I need to talk to my wife and let me see whether she'll allow me, you know?
It's right.
Not even like, we'll talk about it. Like, if she gives me the green light, and I'm like, seriously, you're the man in the relationship? Like, do you even listen to yourself? And I don't mean that in a bad way. Like, I feel bad for them, because they're also stuck and they just don't know how to get out of it. But it's an epidemic, man. Like, I see it all the time. And it's something you really need to take control of and say from day one that, okay, I have my hobbies, and this is what I do, this is what I'm about. And if she's not fine with it, she's not fine with it. But you know, Paul, I found out that the more the woman sees what's important for you, the more she supports you in it. But you need to put your foot down, and you need to be the man in the relationship and say, hey, if I need to go 4 times or 5 times a week to the gym, that's what's important to me. That's what I'm about. And if you're not fine with that, go ahead window shopping with your friends. I have no problem. But this is what I do, and this is important to me. And I found that usually they're fine with it the second or third time, because they're like, hey, go ahead, you know. Or she may even say, do you want me to cook you dinner after, once you get back from the gym? So it works out. Yeah,
I find too, I mean, if you start the relationship up with that frame from the beginning, like, there's no question, they don't even complain about it. I mean, it's such a sad thing too, because frame is important, right? It's one of Rollo's, you know, 9 iron rules here. Mm-hmm. But guys don't understand. Like, if you have to go ask your girl's permission to go hang out with the boys, whose frame are you operating in? You're operating in her frame because you need to get permission from mommy, right? It's like if Nurse Chick and I have plans, right? Like, let's say she does have plans for, like, you know, a Tuesday night or whatever, I'll put it on my calendar, you know? So then if someone says, hey, can you go, you want to hang out Tuesday? I look at my calendar. If I don't have anything going on, I can make those plans. You know, I don't have to check with her, you know? And I don't think she would even expect me to make, you know, to check with her. I might tell her, right? Like, hey, by the way, Tuesday night, I'm going to go hang out with so-and-so, you know, like she would never even question that, you know? So, guys need to set that frame up early on. I think that it behooves them to do that because it's so much harder to correct, you know, a ship, you know, to turn the ship around once you've let it go so far. It's not impossible, but it's so much easier if you just do this from the beginning and just keep that frame from the beginning, you know? But a lot of guys with the betatization through 1,000 concessions lose that over time. And then they wonder, like, why, what happened? It's like, man, this is why you read the book every year, you know, or every 3 months, like Bob here, you know, you gotta do that or you're going to forget and you're going to fall back on old programming. And yeah, it's interesting. It's fascinating to watch that play out. And I've been watching that play out for the last several years, just with various guys from the group, you know, just watching how things play out. It's interesting. Let me ask you. So, you read the book every couple months and you've read it like a bunch of times. What was your last aha moment you got from your last read? Do you still get those?
I would say it was probably this concept of taking one step forward or two steps forward, one step back. Because there was a point of time where I would take it like very seriously. And like, for example, the first time you would bring a girl back to your house, right? Or you would call her over for dinner, let's say it's a second or third date. I had a habit of pulling back too much. So it would be more like I would take two steps forward and five steps back. And it kind of, I later realized that it creates too much of a distance. Like, it's good to have some distance with the girl in you, right? It creates like this kind of tension between the girl, but you don't want it to be too much because she may then think you're not that interested. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, there was this one time where you were sitting on the couch and I think I kind of thought, okay, I want to take it a bit easy because we'd been making out in the kitchen. And then we were like, okay, let's sit down and have dinner. We had dinner and then I put on something on the TV. I think we were playing a game, I'm not sure. And I realized later that I was sitting too far away from her. And so she was not giving me the signals to approach because I was waiting for her to, you know, maybe look at me a certain way or maybe initiate contact. And since there was so much distance between us, she never really did it because I was too far away. And so I realized that as a man, you need to give her the chance to give you the signals. And if you're taking too much distance from her, then it doesn't work out. And that's when I realized what Corey meant. It doesn't mean you pull back too much. It just means you advance. And when you get a rejection, or you maybe not a rejection, but she kind of is like, hey, slow your roll.
Resistance.
That's when you take the step back. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. When I think it was like the fourth or fifth time I read that book, maybe, where I realized with the two steps forward, one step back thing that he actually describes it as doing it throughout the night, throughout the entire date, not just when you get her back to your place, when she's, you know, when you're trying to, you know, seduce her and put the moves on her. But if you do it a little bit throughout the date interaction, you know, like if you're playing pool with her and you go in, you kiss her on her neck a little bit, get close, and then pull back a little bit and go play pool for a little bit, you know, that sort of stuff builds up that sexual tension throughout the night. And so by the time you invite her back to your place, like she's already ready to go, you know? Right. And I found once I started doing that, like it just got so much easier, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The one with pool is also a great tactic. I do it with cooking. Like, cooking is my thing. I love cooking.
Yeah.
But usually what I do is like, I say, okay, we're going to cook a certain meal today. And I ask her, if you have been on a couple of dates, I ask her to bring along some ingredients. And so what we do is we end up in the kitchen, we start cutting stuff. Maybe I throw on some music. And so we are not sitting across each other, but we are standing next to each other, and it creates this dynamic where you can flirt a bit, you obviously have physical contact, and it's like a dance, you know. That's more or less what it is. It's basically a dance leading up to the Indoor Olympics, you know. So yeah, and some people, I don't know, they take them bowling, or you throw darts or whatever it may be, but some physical activity is always good. That's what I've seen.
I liked distraction mini golf. That was always fun. You take a girl to go play mini golf, and you say, okay, we're going to play distraction mini golf. And they're like, what's that? And you're like, okay, that's where whenever it's your shot, I can do whatever I want to distract you. Right. And whenever I go to take my shot, you can do whatever you want to distract me. Like, chicks love that. And chicks are like, it gives them an excuse to get close to you and stuff, and blow in your ear and touch you and do all sorts of stuff.
It's That's just a great one.
Yeah. It's just a good excuse to, you know, plausible deniability to give, to give you an excuse to touch her.
How did we end up next to each other? Oh, I don't know.
I don't even know. Yeah.
So, I've got another one, Paul.
So, yeah.
Just another one. Speaking of coming closer, one I love to do is, especially on the first date, right? So usually you catch up in a restaurant or a bar or wherever it may be, and you tend to have loud music playing, or people are really loud around you. And one thing I love doing is I say, hey, come over here. I can't hear you that well. So I just motion over to sit next to me, and they've always complied. And it's a great way of breaking down the physical distance between you two. And what it also does is you can do the eye test, you know, or the kiss test, and it makes it much easier. And I've found that once she's sitting next to you, it's like game over.
Yeah. And if it's loud, I mean, you have to get into her ear zone to be able to talk to her. Right. So Alan Roger Curry in Mode One talks about getting into a girl's left ear zone. And if you're close enough where you can whisper in her ear, I mean, that's game over, man.
That's a great one, because you're using one of her different senses, right? You have smell, you have sight, eyesight, and sound is another one you can use to good effect. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, my problem is, especially at my age, because I'm old, I can't stand going to places where there's loud music anymore. And like, even if a girl was sitting next to me and was whispering in my ear, I couldn't hear shit. I can't hear a goddamn thing. So I avoid those places. But I used to like that. Maybe that's why I can't hear as well, because I used to like to go to those places. So
what is the name of that place you used to always? I heard that in all of your podcasts.
The Feisty Pint.
The Feisty Pint. That's it.
Yeah.
I've never been there, but you tell me the name, I recognize it.
Yeah, I should reach out to them for a sponsorship deal, because I said everybody on the western slope of Colorado to the Feisty Pint. Yeah, and that place was just a kind of a quiet bar / restaurant, and so it was just a good place to meet up for drinks and stuff like that. It's funny, because Nurse Chick, I didn't take her there for my first date. I actually met Nurse Chick on a coffee date, because she used to work graveyard shifts, so she couldn't go out for drinks. And and so we had already been dating for like 2 years when she finally was like, you know, you've never taken me to the Feisty Pint. But she listens to all the podcast episodes, so she's heard about the Feisty Pint like a million times. But and I go, you know what, I'll take you to the Feisty Pint. So I finally took Nurse Chick to the Feisty Pint, like, I think last year sometime.
She was too special. You didn't. You skipped the Feisty Pint.
Yeah, I have taken her to the Horsefly, though, which is my other go to place in Montrose. But the Feisty Pint is just a cooler name. It's a much cooler name than the Horsefly. Right. So.
I mean, it's good having certain places which you frequent often, because you then automatically, especially on the first date, you feel more comfortable, right? And not only that, the people in the establishment, they know you. And if the girl sees that you're well known there, maybe they're friendlier to you. It's all a plus point, right?
It's just immediate social proof. Yeah. It just works out. And it goes back to the muscle memory thing.
Right.
I got the term from my friend Chuck, cause he used to do, he basically would set up a sales funnel for dates. And he says it like this, and I stole it from him, but he says, he's like, that the chick is the only one that's on a first date. You've been on that first date a million times. it's like, yeah, right. that's how it needs to be. Cause you've been there a bunch of times. The girl's the only thing that's different. And so you just run your playbook and it ends up working out pretty much like clockwork every time, you know, when you start doing it right.
Right. So
makes data easier. Let's talk about this list you came up with. You sent me a list of several items. These are different things based on Corey. So we're going to talk about, you know, what it means, like what Corey means, and maybe, you know, what works different, you know, or what right. worked better for us, right? So the first one you have here is exchanging numbers. And you wrote, is it the job of the man to call the woman? Is it the man's job or the woman's job to do the calling, right? What did you want to say about that?
Yeah, so this is a big one. Like I find, like, for example, if you meet a girl, or it could also be online, like some guys, they say, okay, here's my number, give me a call when you're free. And I find the problem with that is you're putting all the power in the girl's hands. Mm-hmm. And even though she may be interested, you know, people nowadays hate calling. They love being called, but they hate picking up the phone and calling someone. So what I like to do is I exchange numbers and I tell the woman, I'm going to call you. And so she knows from that point onwards that I'm the one in taking the lead and that I'm the one going to be calling. And there's no ambiguity about that. And I find that's kind of the whole point, right? You want to set the tone right from the start. And that's one thing. And the other thing is it's really important to make sure that not only you have her number, but she has a number too. Because mm-hmm. you don't want her to be having a phone call coming in from a number she doesn't know. So like, yeah, that's what I found works best for me.
I've had guys say that they'll walk up to a chick and give her their business card and say, give me a call. And they have some success with that. But it really comes down to women being passive. Like women are really the passive sex. They don't want to be moving the needle. They think it's the man's job. You know, even deep down subconsciously, like they want you to take that initiative. And so you'll have more success if you ask a girl for her number and you make the calls. You'll actually get more dates that way. So yeah, that I would agree with that. And I hate calling too, man. I hate calling. I hate picking up the phone and actually calling. That's one of the things that I differ with Corey on, right? Because Corey's like, that's the only way to do it. You can only set up dates by actually picking up the phone and calling. And I'm like, no, it's just a different generation. And I think most people nowadays prefer text messages or voice messages, right? Because everyone's busy. No one wants to stop what they're doing to take a phone call. Like, I can't stand that. But I would, like, if you send me a voice message, I will, like, when I have a few minutes, I'll listen to it. If you send me a 10-minute voice message, man, fuck off. You know, like, don't send me a 10-minute voice message.
You've got no time for that.
I was listening to Chris Jericho talk. Chris Jericho, if for people listening, if you don't know who he is, he's a pro wrestler. He's a podcast host. He's an actor. He's a rock star. Does all sorts of stuff, right? And he was saying, you know, what he prefers voice messages. He goes, but sometimes people will send like a 10-minute, 20-minute voice message. And he goes, fuck, I don't have time for that. Like I now actually have to plug it into my calendar to set aside time just to listen to your fucking message, you know? So that's one of the things I loved about what Benny was teaching, you know, Benny Lichtenwalder was teaching us how to use voice and video messages more. Cause for me, I found that voice and video messages was just as effective as a phone call and it was less intrusive. So I would say at least get her number and then send her a voice message real quick, you know?
Yeah, but Benny's concept with the video call was a good one too. I found that was something at that time no one was doing. And I found that, although I didn't send so many video calls, but here's another tip. There are certain dating apps which allow you to send voice messages. And I've seen that works every time like a charm. Like there was even a girl who once wrote to me, oh, that's really cool. Like no one has ever done that to me before, you know? And from that point onwards, it was like totally different vibes. And if you get the chance to do anything but text, do it. Whether it's calling, whether it's a video message, whether it's a voice message, anything that's better than text, according to me.
Oh, I agree. And some of my guys that I'm coaching, I'm finally getting them to break that texting habit. Because to this day, most guys don't send voice or video messages. Most guys don't. And so that by itself will set you apart. And so I've noticed my guys that have been struggling for a long time with dating, and I say, send that as a fucking voice message, man, or send that as a video message, man. They're like, oh, they're more receptive to this. They're responding more. I'm like, fucking told you so, dude. Like, God, there's a reason. There's a method to my madness here.
But it's like, you know what you're talking about, Paul.
It's almost like I've done this before. Yeah. So this one, oh, this one's good. So this one actually kind of goes back to the aha moment, right? Because this last one was my last aha moment from the 22nd read. But you have here one date a week. When does it apply and when does it not? But this was something that I didn't realize until the 22nd date that Corey, he's not adamant about one day a week. The whole, you know how women will fall in love by the seventh or eighth date on average.
Right.
He's like the first, 3 to 4 weeks, it's once a week. He goes, but by that time you should have built up so much investment from her that she wants all your attention all the fucking time. And she starts calling you more frequently. And so he's like, by the fourth date, you might start, or the fourth week, you might start seeing her 2 times a week or 3 times a week and stuff like that. And then by the seventh or eighth date, she's asking to be exclusive, you know? And so, or the seventh or eighth week, she's asking to be exclusive. And I was like, oh, I always thought it was like once a week, no matter fucking what. until she asked for exclusivity. So anyway, what were you going to say about that?
You know, it's a similar enlightenment for me with the one date a week, because I was the same as you. I used to be the guy, I would have a date, and usually 99% of the time, the girl used to write me a message, usually the day after or a couple of days later. Mm-hmm. And I would drag these conversations so long, because I knew if I set a date for the next 7 days, I kind of inherently knew it was too long a time. But I still was so steadfast on following Corey's method that I used to do that. And it kind of, by the time the second date came along, which was after a week, it was like we were starting again from scratch. You know, the whole vibe which had built in the first date was kind of gone. And so I started reading Robert Glover, and then I must give you credit too there, Paul, and I'm not trying to blow up your ego because I'm on your podcast, but I need to
No,
this.
Please do. I need it. No.
I need to stop. It's
I need that validation. I could, yeah. No, go ahead.
No, so yeah, and it was, I think, on one of your podcasts where you mentioned that you were not a big believer of the one date a week. And a lot of people in the group came back with the same feedback, which was like this gap of around 2 to 4 days was the perfect, the sweet spot between dates where you set a date. And so what I started doing was like when the girl innately got in contact with me after the date, and let's say on the next day, I used to immediately go in for like, hey, nice to hear from you. I would like to see you. When can we meet again? There would be no chit chat. I would not send like 10 bazillion messages back and forth. I would get straight to the point. And they would immediately be like, yeah, I've got time on Thursday, Friday, and on Monday. And I would choose a date. And it was so smooth. It was so easy. And I realized that there's another thing. Corey has principles, but it's not that you have to stick to them exactly. The fact is he says set a date once a week, because he knows most guys would just immediately be like, hey, my whole week is free, why don't we meet Monday to Saturday? And you know, that's what he's trying to avoid. But
yeah,
the point behind it is you just want to space it out, that at the beginning you want the distance to build attraction, but you also don't want it to be too long. And that's why I found once you have your first date, keep the next date optimally 3 or 4 days later. And then you also don't need to text her constantly between dates, because you're scared that she may, you know, not turn up on the next date.
Yeah. Yeah. I found like waiting an entire week, because usually, so what Corey's trying to do with all this too, a lot of guys need to understand the concept, is that the idea is that you're taking time between dates. You're taking time between texting. You're not supposed to be texting every fucking day. Because that space builds that attraction, and the goal is to get her to start reaching out to you first.
Exactly.
And once she does, you're supposed to use that as an opportunity to set the next date, right? And so if you're waiting an entire, like usually he says in the book too, he's like, after the first date, it's it's very few women are going to reach out first after a first date. He's like, so that's still your job. And then that's where he says, like, wait a week, right? I still say if you like her and you were vibing, like three days max, right? Three, maybe 4 days if you're really pushing it. But you don't want that momentum to die, and it will in 7 days. So wait 3 days and then reach out. If she hasn't reached out, reach out. And then set the next definite date. And I like to, I personally recommend don't setting dates more than 3 days in advance, because that's where the flake rate goes up. So at that point, it might be 6 days between actual dates, but you've at least reached out to her in between then. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
that's a big one. That's a big one. That's a big point, which I found was a game changer for me, was you don't want to keep more than 3 or 4 dates between dates. Because what I found out is that,
between contact, you know? Yeah.
Right. Because what I found out is I'm not someone who texts between dates. Like Corey says, I don't do that. I don't need to. But what I found is, like, there've been quite a few girls who, let's say we had 5 days or 6 days between the dates, or between contact and the date, and by the third date she's texting like, hey, I think this is not going to work out. And I'm like, why? We have a date set up, like, it's all good. And she'd be like, yeah, but there seems to be no effort from our side. And that's where I realized that she took the no contact and the distance between the dates was so long, she took it as a sign of disinterest, you know?
Yeah,
me trying to play her. Yeah,
yeah, that, yeah. So it's important not to, yeah, go too far out. Like one call every 7 days is way too long. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I also found too, because I was trying it where I would go on a date and then I wouldn't contact, like, at all. I would basically go ghost mode for an entire week, and that failed every time, every mm-hmm. single fucking time. And so I liked Dr. Glover's method, which was you basically wait the next day, you know, in the evening, maybe around the time you get off work. That gives her all day to build up that healthy emotional anticipation and tension. And then at 6 o'clock, you release that tension from her, right? By just reaching out saying, hey, by the way, had a good time last night, right? Now she knows you had a good time. She doesn't have to wait. She doesn't think you're ghosting her. And now you can wait 2 or 3 days before setting up the next definite date, you know, without, I thought that was the perfect sweet spot for me. But
that's an interesting viewpoint. I've never tried that one. But yeah, I mean, it could work. Like, maybe a day or two later. Usually what happens is the girl reaches out and she sends you like some innocuous little message, or maybe even a forward on Instagram or whatever. But yeah, if you wait, let's say 24 hours, 48 hours, and then you reach out, it gives her a chance to reach out to you. And if she doesn't, you are reaching out, and so she's not like super anxious, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That could work. Yeah.
Yeah. Ryan Stone. So I'm reading his book on dread right now, and he talks about it as the women have a hamster maze, right? And you occasionally have to release the hamster from the maze, right? You have to show the hamster the exit. So that's you showing the hamster the exit and then waiting another like 3 days before setting the next date. That's putting the hamster back in the maze, you know? So
put that hamster to work, Paul.
Dude, you got to, man. Her imagination is like your friend, you know?
Absolutely.
This next one you have here is, women love to talk, men need to learn how to listen. That was a hard one for me. But you know what helps with that? This podcast. Because I have to listen to my guest so that I have a good interaction with them, you know, and I can play off of what they're saying, you know. That's what a date's like. That's what it should be like, you know.
Yeah, it's basically what's behind this point for me is the part which I think many men miss out is, you're not just listening, but you're also actively listening. So there's a big difference between she's talking and the words go through one ear and they come out right to the other one. And a big part of what women do, and they subconsciously do this, I think, is they also want to see whether what they're saying, it really means something to you. And you will see many times this may come up in the fourth or fifth date, where she will mention a subject which you spoke about on the first date. And if you sit there and you're like, huh, what? She immediately knows, okay, this guy was not listening to me at all. His mind was probably somewhere else. And this is something which is not only a during the dating phase, but during the relationship phase as well. And that's what I think Corey means about is like a woman, the woman's legs open when she feels heard and understood. And a big part of that is really actively listening and being present when she's talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he also says in the book too, he's like, even if you don't remember every little detail about the conversation, you have to at least remember the gist of the conversation. Right. Yeah.
At least know whether it was a pink or a blue dress, but don't say black. Then you're out.
Right. Yeah. That is really hard. But I think, you know, Corey learned, you know, teaches this stuff basically from Dale Carnegie is How to Win Friends and Influence People. But basically just, you know, letting them do 80% of the talking and just being an active listener and asking engaging questions about what they're saying. You know, if you're actually paying attention enough to where you're trying to pick up things to ask questions about, you're going to get the gist of the conversation. You're just going to be a better conversationalist, you know, but a lot [S2] Right. [S1] Of guys won't do that. Most people are just thinking about what they're going to say next. And that doesn't work on the dating scene. So much, you know, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot.
Absolutely. And what I found is like, usually the women with whom I've had the best dates are the ones where it was all effortless. Like we would talk about something and then just, you know, kind of go back and forth because we would just lead on. Like she would start a subject. I would lead on with leading questions. She would go on about it. I would maybe add certain experiences to the topic. And then you don't need to go with like a prepared script, you know, you just lead off each other. And then half an hour turns into 1 hour, 1 hour turns into 2 hours. And those have been the best dates. We may not have even seen each other after that, but just the fact that we had this kind of wide buildup, you know, it's all about actively listening and taking interest in what one another has to say.
Honestly, that's my best podcast episodes are like that. I always have bullet points over here to go back to when I need to, but when my guest and I are just vibing about whatever, and we just start going off on tangents, and the next thing you know, the whole hour's gone. Those are actually the best episodes. I think they just flow better, you know?
Yeah.
So the next one here is women are more attracted to men whose feelings are unclear, which is, I love saying this one because women are always quick to go, that's not true. That's not true. It's like, hey, Google it. It's like the first, when you Google that phrase, it's been scientifically proven that women are more attracted to men whose feelings are unclear. The first thing that comes up is a scientific study that proves that women are more attracted to men whose feelings are unclear. So you put here, you don't have to be a dick. It's a balancing act. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, this is a big one. And it ties into the fact that, you know, Corey also says, as a man, you need to keep planning dates. And why is that? It's because a woman is curious, right? The whole point, like you said, which ties into the hamster and the wheel, is women are naturally curious. And a big part of that is also that you remain a mystery. And that ties in again to the fact that a woman tends to reach out. Like when you're in a relationship, she probably reach out to you twice, thrice, four times a day. And if you're going about your work, your daily life, you don't have time to maybe pick up a call, but you say, hey, babe, I'll call you back in the evening. And this is a whole part of building this curiosity in the woman where she's like, what's Paul doing? He's not reached out to me the whole day. It's not because you're being a dick about it. You actually have something to do. Hopefully, if you're working on yourself, you have something to do in the morning, in the evening. And then you are like respectful about it. You can even send her back a message and say, hey, I'm busy at work. You know what? I'll call you back later. I love you. Bye. And what you're doing about it is you're communicating. You're not stonewalling. You're telling her, hey, I acknowledge that you tried to call me. I'll get back to you when I can. I'm just busy right now. And that's like what I find is a happy medium. There are a lot of people I find like in the space who advocate, you know, maybe even ignoring your girl for a couple of days just to build attraction. And I'm like, you don't really need to do that. If you're going about it the right way, you can be open, you can communicate about it, but you can still maintain the attraction by doing things which need to be done in that point of the time. And that's what I feel is like this balancing act which needs to be there. You don't want to be too communicative and too open for her where you're like in the middle of a meeting, or God forbid you're a surgeon and you're in the middle of, you know, doing heart surgery. Your girl calls and be like, hey man, I'm sorry, I need to go away for 5 minutes, you know? So that's what I meant by this happy medium.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What a lot of guys don't understand is what I figured out with this was that we all have an addiction to texting. It's a dopamine hit, right? We want to text all day long, every day. And for guys, that makes you come across as needy as hell. It's unattractive behavior. And women like doing it because of the validation factor. Right. So they're addicted to it too. They're just as addicted to it as guys are. So a lot of this stuff, it starts off as being like game, like a game, but what you're really trying to do is break that unattractive behavior habit. And what you'll find is by playing some of these games, like instead of texting her back right away, you set a timer, right? Like that's just that breaks your habit. And then you actually become a busy guy. And a busy right. guy is just naturally more attractive. And a lot of times too, when you're in the initial phases of dating and you're not texting her all the time and you're not texting on Friday or Saturday nights and stuff like that, she's like in her mind, the hamster wheel's going and the hamster maze, they're sitting there going, I bet she's out with other girls. And that actually is more attractive because that shows them that you potentially have other options, and women have that pre-selection. They call that mate choice copying, right? Where they think that if you have other girls, like all of a sudden you're more attractive to them now. It's subconscious for them. And so if they think that you might be out with other girls, they try harder. It's it's all psychology, but at the end of the day, you got to make it a part of who you are. Like with Nurse Chick, right? Nurse Chick and I don't text her. I barely text her, honestly. I don't send her good morning, good night texts. I don't do that.
Oh God. Yeah.
that is such unattractive, validating behavior. A lot of guys think that girls like that. And girls will say they like that. It's fucking bullshit. They don't. They might like it at first, but it turns them off after a while. They're like, what is up with this guy? So yeah,
absolutely.
Nurse Chick, like sometimes it might go like, we might go two or three days and I haven't texted her, and she'll reach out and she'll just say, hey, just stopping by to let you know I'm thinking about you or whatever. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. I do have to text her every once in a while, that's how it is. But it's because I broke that texting habit. I don't have to text all day. And she knows that. And so she's also not super worried about it,
Right.
And so it works out.
Paul, I found it puts less stress on the woman as well. Cause I've had in all my relationships till now, every time they've all said the same thing. They're like, you know what? It's really refreshing to have someone who's not calling me every single hour on the day, And they appreciate it. They may not like it in the beginning because they think you're supposed to reach out every time. But on the long run, they find it's way more relaxing because there's not this pressure that, okay, we need to be on the phone at 12 o'clock in the midday. I need to have a good night text from you. I need to have a good morning text from you. I need to have a breakfast text from you. It just puts too much pressure on both parties,
Oh, yeah. It definitely does. It's one of the things too, I get a lot of questions are, when guys are like, well, once you're in a relationship, when can you start texting her every day? Fucking never, dude. Like, stop. Like, you gotta keep doing what you did to attract her in the first place. Like, that's how you keep this relationship going long term. And you can't just start going into unattractive behavior because that's what kills the relationship. So you just gotta break that habit, bro. Like, what I tend to tell guys, like, no, just break that habit completely. Just don't be a texter. Don't be a guy that fucking texts all the time. It's be on your purpose. You've got to be a man on your purpose. And you can't do that if you're texting all the fucking time. So
yeah, and even in a long-term relationship, like usually you'd probably be living together and then you come back home in the evening and you find you have nothing to talk about. Why is that? Because you have been texting the whole day. Obviously not going to have anything to talk about. And that's where the mystery goes. And then before you know it, you find that both of you are sitting next to each other on the couch and nothing to talk about. She's going crazy on her Snapchat. You are on Instagram looking at the next car you're about to buy. Why? Because you've got nothing to talk about. And the next thing you know, she's like, I don't feel the spark. That's what it leads to.
Chris Rock has a funny bit about that. He's like, our grandparents didn't have cell phones and they were madly in love with each other. Why? Because after a long day of work, they actually fucking missed each other and they had stuff to talk about. They hadn't been chatting with each other all fucking day long. You know, they Absolutely. Actually took time away from each other so that they would miss each other. It works out that way. It's amazing. Attraction grows in space. All right. So you have here, when a woman reaches out, it's a sign to set a date. How this even applies to social media. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. So, yeah, we already mentioned that already when it comes to the waiting a week thing, right? Like when a woman reaches out, you're supposed to take that as an opportunity to set the next definite date. So how does that apply to social media?
Yeah, so there was a time where way back when I used to post certain video updates on the group. And one of the things which I kind of experimented with was, how can you use social media, like let's say Facebook or Instagram, to have women reach out to you? And so one thing I did was I used to actively post things, not selfies, but you know, things I used to do, interesting things I used to do, maybe on the weekend, if I went on a hike, or you know, I love walking dogs. There's an animal shelter where I take dogs out on walks. And I regularly used to post that. And what I found would happen was that girls would just reach out to me, and some of them would be like, hey, that looks like a cute dog, and is that your dog? Or some of them, you know, you have the option of just reacting to it with emojis and stuff like that. And I found out that this is like their subtle way of saying like, hey, I find you interesting and I'd love to talk to you. So what I would do was I would reach back out and I'd be like, hey, how's your day going? Or, you know, just reach out to them. And I find that most guys probably don't take that first step. And we live in an age where everything is working over social media. And these are the new cues, you know, probably you would be walking in a mall and a girl would maybe give you a smile and you may have approached her. That is now basically the heart emoji on Instagram. And I find that that's a subtle way which women send out cues. Or another big one is like, for example, they like your pictures. She never texts you, she never says a word, but she just likes her pictures. And you're like, that's weird. Why is she liking all my pictures? Well, it's because she wants you to reach out, dude.
Yeah, if she goes, all of a sudden you get like 10 notifications that she liked like 10 of your pictures at once. You're like, yeah. Okay, she must be Facebook stalking me right now.
Exactly. And women love stalking. Women love stalking you.
Oh, they do, man. I just posted a video yesterday at the time of this recording. It went viral on TikTok. It's got a million views right now, this duet I did of this chick who, she saw a cute guy at the supermarket, so she subtly like followed him to the checkout and then like reached over and peeped his name on his credit card, and then internet stalked him, found his social media, found out that he was single, because on Facebook you can put your, you know, that your relationship status. She found out he was single. She went through his friends list, found his mom, found out his mom was a part of a local book club. She joined the book club, went to the book club, and wow. You know, talked to her mom, suddenly brought up how she was single in the conversation, and her mom's like, oh, well, my son's single too. She's like, oh, that's fascinating. And so the mom gave her their son's number. And so, I'm sorry. So she gave her mom her number to give to her son, and her son reached out and texted to set the date. And I was like, that's girl game, bro. That's girls will put themselves in your orbit so that you ask them out. Like, that's girl game. And all these guys were losing their mind in the comments, like, that's stalking. And I'm like, that's genuine desire. that's a woman who knows what she wants and she goes after it. They're like, well, she could just say hi. It's like, well, girls don't operate that way. Women are passive. They want you to ask them out. So they put themselves in your orbit. Your job is to ask them out. That's how it works, you know, but a lot of guys get freaked out by that.
Yeah. You know, it's like we talk about when a door opens, you walk through it. When it closes, you walk through. This girl literally opened her main door, her garden gate, and was running out. And she's like, come back.
Right.
Talk to me, please.
Right.
Yeah.
I had a client who he had this girl. He's into dancing, and he had this girl that wanted to be his dance partner, because he was like, he had that contextual alpha Ness, where he was the best, he's the best goddamn dancer in the class. So she was really, you know, wanting to get with him and be his dance partner. And she was making herself all sorts of available. You know, she was texting him and she was saying, oh, I'm free on these nights and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Ask her on a date, bro. And he just kept, you know, fumbling the ball, and he would go out and do dances with her and enter competitions. But when she was making herself available, he just wasn't pulling that trigger. And then he eventually, you know, missed out on the opportunity. I was like, dude, she's literally opening all the doors of her house and the windows and the fucking skylights, dude. She's, she's basically, the only thing possible she could do else is to ask you out, which she's not going to do because she's a woman, you know? So,
and these are the ones which hurt, you know, these are the ones which really hurt. And
yeah,
unfortunately, your friend will probably be thinking about it 10 years down the line. Like, that's the one that got away. We men sometimes are like really blind, you know, we don't see the obvious cues, or we convince ourselves like, no, she's just being friendly, man. You're like, no, just go talk to her. She's
that's the thing. That's the thing. He's a client. And so I'm like, I'm telling him, dude, ask her out, set a date. Right. And he just wouldn't do it. And then he comes back a few weeks later. And I was like, bro, I told you what to do. You just didn't do it, you know? So that, unfortunately, those types of lessons are hard lessons that guys sometimes have to learn on their own. But, you know, but it's like, I mean, I was, and it's not to shit on this guy at all. And he's made so much progress, since I've been working with him, but, I was the same way, man. Like when I was out dating after divorce, I was like, women were putting out super obvious cues with me. And I just was like, you know, like, cause you're afraid of maybe misreading the cue, you know, you're like, oh, maybe I think she's just being nice. Right. And you don't want to you don't want to get it's basically, you're afraid of rejection. So it's like, when you realize, you know what, just fucking go for it, bro. Like, what's the worst that can happen? She says no, you know, like,
exactly.
It's not even that bad, which sort of brings us to the next topic here, which is the kiss test, right? You said, you know, how to apply it properly, and then kissing even before the date ends can work. I mean, this probably by itself was the number one game changer for me. But what did you want to say about the kiss test?
Yeah, this is a big one. This is what I call the make or break. Basically, up until the kiss test, it's not fully established that you are there not on a friendly basis, but on a romantic basis, right? And according to me, the kiss test is the one which basically, from there onwards, there is no doubt about it, what both of you are looking for. And there was a point of time where I would wait till the end of the date to kiss. And I found that in retrospect, there were so many instances where the girl was giving cues right from the beginning. And I mean, right from the beginning. Like, we would meet each other, I would set a place, set time, date and place, just like Corey says. And she would literally be like, from the moment we hugged, she would be like bumping into me right from the get-go. And I have seen that that's basically a sign that she already is physically attracted to you. And from there onwards, it's so easy to go for the kiss. I mean, I've had dates where I went for the kiss right within the first 10 minutes, you know? And I think it's really important, and it's a big sign of confidence when you can read the cues of a woman and go in for the kiss when the time is right, and not wait till the end of the date, or God forbid, for the second date, because then you're pushing things back. And it's like, it'll take longer for the woman to grow her interest to you. And I found, like, I'm sure you have too, Paul, like, the cues of interest from a woman can vary from the hundreds of cues. It could be she bumps into you while you're walking down the road. It could be that you're sitting across and her knee just happens to accidentally touch you. Or it could be that, yeah, you can't see me, but I'm doing the quotes. Trust me.
I'm doing the quotes too, like, for the people on Audible or on iTunes.
right. Or, you know, flicking the hair, or the N number of them. And when you go out on sufficient number of dates, you read them immediately. And when you then go in for the kiss, you see, like, there's like this bewildered smile on her face. She's like, is he really? Is he really? Oh, he is. And then she goes in, and from that point, she's like, put it in your hands, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What I found a lot of times too is, a lot of women are, like, aren't especially on a first date, they're just as nervous as you are. You know, a lot of women, especially like women that are dating after divorce, you know, like guys my age. And what you'll find is that women aren't overly obvious with their cues. And so if you at least apply the kiss test at the end of the date, if you like her, right? Don't kiss her if you don't like her, but if you like her, like, go for it, go for that kiss, because that will tell you everything you need to know, right? How receptive she is of it. And I found that like 90% of the time, the chicks were very receptive to it. And a lot of chicks would even just melt, right? Like almost like they hadn't been kissed in forever. And it's just such a bold move, and women respond to boldness and confidence so well that it's actually very attractive to them. And so when I started doing that and just quit being a pussy about it and just fucking went in, it almost always worked out. There was only like a couple of times where it didn't work out. And even then, it wasn't that big of a deal. It was like, I had one chick say, "Oh, we're doing this now." She still kissed me, but then, you know, and we went on a second date, but that was a waste of time. I had one chick go, "Not on a first date." And I was like, "Okay, cool." Never fucking called her again. And let's see, I had another chick. I think I had one chick like, you know, go to give me the cheek. And I just pulled back. I didn't even give her the kiss on the cheek, and I just didn't call her again. Cause like, if you go for a kiss and she's not receptive, she's not into you, and it's okay. And you know, you just got to move on to the next chick. You know, don't overthink it. Don't go for a kiss and she gives you the cheek and you go, "I think I'm going to ask her on a second date, cause maybe it'll be different the second time." Nah, just fucking cut your losses, bro. Yeah. And go on to the next chick. There's literally 4 billion bitches out there, you know?
Absolutely. So, absolutely. And this is one thing from Corey, which I wasn't sure I agreed on in the beginning, where he talks about the structured woman. And I was like, I don't know if that really works, but it's really true. Cause like you said, the girl may give you the cheek, and then the second date, you're like, "Oh, on the second date, I don't sleep with you." And it's like, you know that she's given you all the cues that if she wanted, she would. And yeah, it's not the point about sleeping with her on the second date. The point is that she has a set of rules that she'll follow. And even in the relationship, you'll have a hard time, because you want a woman who's flexible. You want a woman who follows you. And if she's not even willing to, you know, get over the first step and kiss you, it's not going to work out in the long run, in my opinion.
No, it just comes down to women make rules for guys they're not sexually interested in, and they break them for guys they are sexually interested in. If a woman wants to fuck you, she will figure out how to fuck you. Okay.
Oh yeah.
And the same thing goes with a kiss, right? You can take it back a step to just kissing. You know, if they wanted to, they would. If they're making rules for you, they're just not that interested. It's like, just cut your losses, man. It's okay. We're trying to find women with high interest, you know, with that genuine desire that we talk about in the red pill space. So, yeah. We're over an hour here. How are you on time? Are you good?
I'm good.
Okay. Cause you have one last one here, being masculine. What does it really mean? What did you want to say about that?
Yeah. Oh, this is a can of worms. I mean, there are people out there who believe being masculine means you are the one who's more or less leading the woman. And that's true to a certain extent. But for me, masculinity is something which, just like defining frame, you can't define frame, in my opinion, in one word, right? It has different factors to it. And just like that, masculinity, for me, one big part that I feel a lot of people forget about is you've got to be reliable. And I've seen that what that means is you have to be a man of your word. So like, for example, if you have told your girl that you're gonna do something for the both of you, you've got a date planned, or you've promised her that you're going to maybe fix something in the house or whatever it may be, you've got to stick to your word. And something that women which don't like is a man who cannot stick to his word, because it shows that he can be easily led away from his purpose as well, right? So I feel like masculinity is something which you, again, it comes back to, you have to live it. It's not a set of things that you can learn to do, you know. You have to practice it day in, day out. And if you are a masculine person right from the get-go, and even when you're single, you can do that in a relationship. If it's like a facade you put on, it's going to wear out. She's going to see through it. And I think that's one of the, it's probably the most important thing right next to frame for me.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of goes to, It goes to like one of the reasons why pickup is stupid, right? Pickup artistry is dumb because it's superficial. You know, it's a bunch of parlor tricks to in the short term get girls maybe to sleep with you, but it doesn't work. It does not work in the long term, and that's one of the reasons why like all the guys in the book The Game were miserable, because they were able to get chicks to sleep with them, but they couldn't keep any chicks around, and almost all of them were longing for some kind of long term romantic relationship, and none of them could keep a chick around that long because they had no frame. They were actually weren't masculine. They were, you know, super fucking emotional little bitches and stuff. I mean, God, Mystery's actually making rounds again. He was just on.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. He was just on Fresh and Fit, and he was just on Mike Sartain's podcast. And, he's super blue pilled, that guy, you know, it's kind of sad to see, you know, like, yeah, he's still up to his same old tricks. He hasn't learned a goddamn thing. You know, he's still doing the pickup artistry stuff, which is, you know, like I said, it doesn't fix it's not the root solution, right? The root solution is to embrace your masculinity and be a fucking masculine man, you know, because women want to relax in their feminine, and they can only do that if you're fully in your masculine, you know? So
yeah, it's kind of like a paradox, you know, like, because like you mentioned Mystery, and there are a whole lot of other people who are into the pickup artistry thing. It's basically, they're trying to do everything perfectly. They're trying to do everything by the book. And that's not how a date works. That's not how a relationship works. Life throws you a curveball. And that's where you really know, okay, am I really who I claim to be? Or am I just putting up a front? And when you're putting up a front and you're kind of faking things, that doesn't come across as authentic, right? I'm sure Corey is also not someone who does everything perfectly. He just goes with the flow because that's the kind of person he is, you know? And if you, that's comes back to the point of living it. If you're not truly living who you are, you may probably get to the second or third date, but it's not going to work out in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think another, a problem too with, you know, being masculine is that it goes back to being a nice guy, right? We've got several generations now of us being raised as nice guys. Largely what that means is basically because of the way society is set up with the gynocentric social order, men are raised to be defective women nowadays. Men are actually raised to be very feminine. You know, oh, you got to embrace your emotions. You got to show your feelings and all this kind of stuff. And basically we're taught to act like women. And women don't want to date other women typically, unless they're lesbians, you know? And so that's the problem, is guys have to learn, like a lot of guys just aren't taught to be masculine anymore. And they don't even know what that means. And so when you start showing them this stuff, they're like, oh shit. And then women respond to that. And you're like, it's eye opening for these guys when they start embracing their masculinity and start acting more masculine. It's a game changer, you know?
Oh, it is. Absolutely. And one thing I found which was a game changer for me was, Paul, I realized for a long time that my father was traditionally a masculine man. But the thing is, he was not that present in my life the way my mother was. And so my mother had way more influence on the way I used to act and the things I used to do, you know. And so what I took upon myself was, this was something I started last year, was to kind of go through my family tree and look at the way the men and what influence they had on the lives on the men in our family tree, and I found a lot of things which kind of mirrored into the way I act, and I've been working on that. I've have a therapist who I used to visit for some time, and it really helped me. And once you realize the standards and the kind of the ways in which you do things, which are not you basically, but it's kind of like, it's like a mask. And once you're able to take off the mask, then a real you comes out. And it's like Robert Glover says, you are not perfect, but a woman loves a man who can be authentically himself with all his imperfections, but is not afraid to show it. And I think that is something which we as men really need to get back to doing, is being just the raw men that we are. And the masculinity will come through with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. A lot of things too is like, just some traits, I would say some masculine traits that I had to learn with this journey for me was like being decisive, being more decisive. Mm. That was one of them. You know, a lot of guys, I find too, the concept of setting a definite date, right? And then like Dr. Robert Glover teaches guys to tell a girl, right? Tell her, meet me at this place at this time. That by itself has carried over to all sorts of aspects of my life. It, even when it's like, I'm setting up a client call with my clients, it's, I'm like, hey, when are you free to meet up this week? Right. And they'll tell me their time frame, and I'll say, cool, Tuesday night, 7 PM, you know, like I'll tell them that. I'll set definite dates. What I'll find is some of the guys that I'm just freshly working with can't do that. Right. I'm like, right, when are you free to get together? And they're like, oh, I don't know, maybe this day and this day. And I'm like, okay. Or I'm like, how's Thursday night look for you or something? And they're like, oh yeah, Thursday would be good. But they don't give me a time frame, you know? Right. And I'm like, what does that mean with Thursday would be good? What time? You know, like, so I have to still be the one that sets the date. It's like, it's just a habit that, or a bad habit that a lot of us have. We're just wishy-washy with things, you know? And I think that's a big problem too. Guys just don't know how to set definite times, you know, at this time, this place, this, you know, and just being decisive, just pick, I always love using the restaurant thing because it's just an easy example, but just fucking pick a restaurant, man. Don't like all these guys complain about their girl not picking a place. That's not her job. Mm. You know, it's your job.
Yep.
That's being masculine. That's setting the tone. That's leading, you know? So just fucking pick a place. If she doesn't like it, she can offer a better suggestion, but I've never even gotten to that point. Every time I started doing that, and I just tell women like, hey, this is what we're having for dinner. They're like, okay, sounds good. Like, women just like being told what to do. It's that's just their passive nature, you know? So that by itself is just part of being masculine. So
women love a man with a plan. If you are someone who always has a place where you can go to, I found that you don't need to do anything special, but a woman hates being bored. And if you are someone who can always just come up with the plan on the fly, man, women love that stuff. They automatically start following in your lead. But if you're someone who's like, oh, I don't know where we're going, what would you like to do? And you know, it's something which Corey also talks about. You will very soon find that she suddenly starts getting bitchy with you, and she starts throwing up tantrums. And it's one of the most important things is a man has to be certain. You got to have a plan. And it's like you said, if you're the one who's always leading, she has no reason not to follow you. If you are the one who always has a place, or maybe even two, you can give a woman an option where you want to eat. And she usually will be like, oh, it's okay, you choose, you know?
Yeah. Well, one thing that I think Ryan says it well in Dread is that without leadership, women will begrudgingly fill that void. They'll fill that vacuum, but they'll resent you for it, right? If you're not the one that's leading the relationship, they will take the lead. And then they will fucking resent you for it. And that's where you Absolutely. Get like the bitchy wife from, like, cause guys are like, God, why women are always nagging. Like, not if you lead the relationship, if you set the tone and lead and she doesn't have to think about things and you plan things out, like you won't have a bitchy woman on your hands. You just won't, you know,
these are usually the guys who will be going with the woman to the nail salon on a Friday night. Right.
Right. Holding purses, going back to that. Bob, this is it's been a good conversation, man. I like to ask all the 3% brothers this: what does being a 3% man mean to you? We all know what the book definition is, but what does it mean to you?
Right, a 3% man. I think this is someone we spoke about it today. Someone who definitely has frame not only on the women in his life, but in his own life. He has a purpose in his life. He knows not maybe how he's going to get there, but he knows where he wants to go. He's someone who's already always looking to get out of his comfort zone. Yeah. And the second thing is he loves taking decisions. And I think a 3% man is something which we unfortunately nowadays in society don't see, is someone who lives the life and is unapologetically masculine for me.
All right. I think that's a good one. Bob, since you're anonymous, I won't ask where people could find you online today. But guys, if you want to connect with Bob, you can find him in the 3% Brotherhood group under a different name. You have to have read How to Be a 3% Man by Corey Wayne at least once, though, to be able to get into the group. You can't just join the group. You know, and we did that on purpose because what I find is guys need to have skin in the game. Guys need to have skin in the game of some sort, or else they're not going to put any effort in. They're not going to value the interaction. So there is a bunch of guys with that are on top of their game in the group, and you can put questions in there and guys are happy to answer that stuff, but you got to do some of the work yourself. You know what I mean? So at least read the book and then join the group, or you can join my beer club, but Bob's not in the beer club. So you can't talk with Bob in my beer club. You should join the beer club, Bob.
I should, man. And I would just like to say, you guys need to read or listen to Paul's book. It's a really good one. I just downloaded it on Audible last week.
Oh, I'm glad you listened to it. Yeah, my good friend Thor did the narration for that. So
I loved it.
Good. I'm glad you liked it, man. All right, brother, I'm going to give you the rest of your... What time is it there where you're at?
Oh, it's 10:15 in the evening.
Oh, geez. All right. I'll let you have the rest of your night back, man. Have a good evening.
It was a pleasure. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, you're welcome back anytime. Bob, thank you. I can't get around that, dude. The name Bob, it's just not you, bro. It's just not you. You're not that guy. You're not that guy, pal. But Bob, you are welcome back anytime. In fact, we were already chatting at the time of the recording of this outro of you coming back on the show. So I will definitely have you back on. You're a wealth of knowledge, especially in when it comes to dating in game. You know, you're one of those guys that's been doing the work. You know, you're not just reading the book and you know, just paying it lip service. You're actually going out there and doing it. So welcome back anytime. All right, guys, that's all I have for this episode. If you haven't done so yet, please like, subscribe, hit those notifications. What are you even doing with your life? If you guys haven't commented yet, what are you even doing with your life? Drop that emoji below. You know what to do. Follow me on social media. The links are in the description. Guys, get on the email list. Get your free stickers, man. I'm almost out of these stickers, and I'm contemplating whether I should order more. Or if I do order more, I'm going to order different ones, right? We've had these ones for a while. I'll probably keep the red-pilled one. But I think I'm going to order some, like, you know, girl, you know, I'm a bad boy stickers. I think guys would like that one. Let me know what you guys think in the comments. Guys, do get my book, Everything I Wish I Knew When I Was 18. It's a real book. It's not one of those grifter, you know, 60-page nonsense pamphlets, okay? It's a real book. It's a guide for life. You don't have to be 18 to get value out of this book, okay? Get the book now. Join my beer club. It's a very active group of guys. A lot of guys don't have an outlet where they can go and talk to other like-minded dudes, okay, that are studying the stuff and swapping notes. This is it. It's probably the most affordable men's group in the men's space, all right? And then finally, if you guys want to work with me directly, book a call by going to coaching.comeonmanpod.com. And, you know, watch the video. See if working with me might be a good fit for you. Other than that, that's all we have. We'll see you Wednesday for the live stream.
This has been the Come On Man podcast. New full episodes served hot every Monday morning on your favorite podcast platform of choice. So subscribe now. Follow Paul on social media. The links are in the description. Now, go out and get it.